What's going on, everyone? Welcome to the Davidson Hang podcast, where I get to interview amazing people and help share their wisdom with the world. Let me know your takeaways and feel free to connect with the guests. I'm aiming to build a community around coaching, self-development, leadership, where people are not afraid to be their most authentic versions of themselves. You can find us on video by searching the Davidson Hang podcast on YouTube. Welcome and enjoy the ride. What's going on, everybody? I'm bringing to you one of the flyest dudes I've ever met in my life, Austin Henlon.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I appreciate it.
He's a TEDx speaker. I told him that I'd be working for him one day, and you know, this guy just has this positive energy. Everyone just loves him. He just has exudes like confidence and like humility at the same time, if that's even possible. It does it all, man.
No, man. I'm just trying to be like you, Davidson.
Stop. Well, I'm really excited to have you on my podcast. I was blown away by your initiative, just reaching out. You know, I would like to think that I'm pretty proactive about reaching out to people, but you know, you put me to shame, so I can be in 10 years from now. It's hard for me to comprehend that, like, mind blown, you know?
No, yeah, I appreciate it, man. I'm excited to see how things turn out.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to pick your brain about, you know, like, first of all, like, being a TEDx speaker, what was that like?
Yeah, it was a super fun experience. I actually never thought it would happen or anything like that. I'd just been creating content on LinkedIn for a while. And a friend of mine who I had kind of worked together with in a previous volunteer experience, mm-hmm. He reached out to me one day and he told me that he was organizing a TEDx event. But it was still kind of in the works and he wasn't sure if he wanted to do it or not. So I was just talked with him for a while and told him, like, hey, you know, that's an awesome project to work on. And so I followed up with him a couple months later, see how he was doing. And then he invited me to apply to speak. He wasn't in charge of the circle, or I guess the board, the committee that was in charge of getting TEDx speakers approving their talks. Mm-hmm. But he told me, hey, you should just submit a topic idea, kind of like a pitch, and see what they think. And then, yeah, they got back to me a couple weeks later and said that they wanted me to speak TEDx. And it was super awesome. Wow. Kind of just like spent a couple months researching, kind of getting a better idea of what I wanted to talk about. Mm. And yeah, I didn't have any sort of teleprompter or anything. So I just like had to memorize my speech. That was like the hardest part, trying to make sure I didn't mess up. But didn't embarrass myself too bad. So.
That's awesome. And then you also did 500, you said you did 500 resumes. Like, tell us about what you learned from that experience. I'm sure there's a lot of takeaways from that.
Yeah, for sure. So a little context, kind of like on LinkedIn, when I heard that LinkedIn was following through with their commitment to have an internship, even though it's going to be virtual, mm-hmm. you know, I felt super grateful because I was reading all of these posts from friends and people all over the world, you know, who due to COVID-19, they lost their internship. And feeling this, I felt undeserving of, you know, such a wonderful opportunity. And so I told anyone, hey, if you reach out to me, I'd love to help optimize your LinkedIn profile for free. It's something that I enjoy doing on my time, you know, just all of the hours that I've spent learning about LinkedIn, I like to give back where I can. And I was expecting maybe 15, 20, 25 people to message me, but it got a lot more traction than I thought. It ended up reaching over 500,000 people, and I got just hundreds and hundreds of messages. And so I responded to each one, and I told them, like, look, thanks for messaging me. I didn't think I'd get so many, so it might take me a minute to respond to you, but I will get to you. And then so about 2 months later, I'd reviewed over 500 of the profiles. It took me a while, but finally got around to it. And it was just an amazing and humbling experience. you know, just seeing how nice the people were and being able to give back in that way is something that I'd never been able to do at such a large volume, but on a personalized basis.
See, that's why I'm saying, man, there's certain people you meet in your life and you know, like, man, this guy is going to like be somebody. I mean, not to say already somebody, clearly you are, but like when you hear stories like that, like one day I'm going to be like, I knew that guy.
Yeah, right.
He's on episode 57 of the Davidson podcast. Now, you know, he owns like, you know, CNN, the channel or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. You know me. I'm just kidding.
That's awesome. Well, one thing that really I found fascinating, this ties to you just have a knack for being able to, I feel like all your posts pretty much go viral. So it seems like you've really like cracked the code on how to drive engagement through LinkedIn and how to really build your professional brand.
Yeah, it definitely took a while to get to the point where I am now. I'd say I've been posting kind of consistently for the past year, 14 months. Usually I've been trying to post at least once a week. But actually before that I would post like every other month, things like that. But about 14 months ago, that's when I kind of decided like, hey, I want to actually start creating content, build the following, kind of build that personal brand. And so I posted usually on the weekdays, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday time. And I had an internship where it was for a LinkedIn consulting company. So the company kind of coaches and helps executives at multimillion-dollar companies to write their content, help with their follower campaign, get new connections. And my job was to analyze hundreds of posts and see kind of what types of things performed well. And that's what gave me the confidence to start posting in the first place. But that was, you know, when I started out, I was getting like 5-10 likes. And then I started asking questions kind of around the 50 range for about a year or so. But it wasn't until a couple months ago that I started to understand a little bit more about my crowd, my target audience. Did the same thing. I tracked data to see what types of first liners and kind of headlines performed well with my target audience. And then, yeah, so it was all just through trial and error. And now I feel like I've finally figured out a format that I enjoy doing and kind of fits my voice, but also in a way that the people I'm connected with enjoy learning about. And so, yeah, it definitely took a while to get to this point, but right now, you know, I just enjoy kind of being able to help people where I can with content creation.
Well, that's amazing, because I feel like that's such a valuable skill to have. So, and I know you mentioned like creating your own audience, right? Your target audience. So as of right now, what's your target audience? And do you see that changing as you progress in your career?
Yeah. So initially my target audience was kind of like college students. Because, you know, I'm a college student. I'll be entering my senior year in the fall. And I had seen around school, most people hadn't been taught how to use LinkedIn. You know, in class, we're taught the importance of the platform and told to go network. But I mean, what does that even mean? You know, most students, we hear about the importance, but never learn how to do it. And so since I just done it through a lot of trial and error, took a long time to figure things out, my initial target audience was college students. And that still is my primary kind of like focus. But it's also branched out to anyone who's new to the platform on LinkedIn, job seekers who want to create a profile powerful enough to appear in recruiter searches, kind of get targeted by companies that they want to work for, and people who want to get more out of their kind of build a brand but don't know where to start. And so I try and make all of my posts actionable. And so I try and leave something, some sort of process or some sort of tips that they can follow and see, like, instead of just kind of the motivational side of things, like, oh, that's cool. I try and give actionable tips that I've seen have helped me.
Yeah. I mean, LinkedIn. So like during your internship, like, how did you track this data? Did you use an Excel sheet? Like, how were you able
to? Yeah. So they, for the majority of it, like the 2-3 months that I was there, all of it, I just did an Excel sheet built out kind of like an Excel CRM, you know, where I just like had different columns, track different metrics, data, and used filters to figure things out. Towards the end of it, the company went to a more automated process using a third party company that kind of showed graphs and things like that. And so at that point, it seemed like I only used it for a little bit, and then my internship came to an end. But from what I saw, it still had good value. You know, being able to see the actual graphs was super helpful. But in my experience, since most of what I did was the Excel, and I didn't want to pay for a third party company, what I've been doing personally has just been on Excel.
So I'm curious, like, let's say you test and then you have one post that isn't as viral as like others, like, do you delete that post or do you just like take it as a data point and like, okay, that didn't work?
Yeah. I just keep it as a data point to kind of see. And that's like some of my favorite things, you know, is when a post doesn't do well, I take that, I accept that kind of as a challenge, like, oh, cool. Let's figure out what was different about this one that, the other ones had better or like did better. So I like to try and analyze it and see like, all right, what made this one so different from others? If it was either time of day of the week, if it was the first line, or if it was just the whole body side of it, or like, what was the ratio of views to likes and comments, things like that. And I just try and figure out what types of headlines or like, yeah. So I just take it as a challenge to see what I can do better next time.
So what are what are some of the best times of the day, if that even matters? I mean, obviously content is probably more important, right? But then does the time matter as well?
Yeah. So like you said, obviously content, if it's valuable, it will be seen. Content is like the most important thing. But for me personally, I've stuck to the morning hours because I've seen the most success with that. I'm not generalizing it that to say everyone like should post in the morning because that's the best. But all of the accounts that I enjoy following and like have kind of looked up to as content creators, they usually post in the mornings because that's when, you know, people are getting to work. They wake up and in the morning, just like people check either the newsfeed, a lot of people, while they're getting ready in the morning, they check their LinkedIn feed or, you know, are you eating breakfast, things like that. And then just like take a couple breaks throughout the day. So as you take the breaks throughout the day, there's a higher chance that people see your post. And so I've always seen better performance kind of like on the weekdays and in the morning. But with COVID and everyone working from home, I've noticed that time of day has become less relevant because, you know, everyone's always online now. They don't have commute times or things like that. So it was more prominent before the coronavirus era.
And I was seeing some of your posts, like you're averaging like crazy amount, like 200 and something to 400 likes like per post, right?
Yeah. Recently, I'd say just recently it started. Ever since I created that one post of when I did those 500 profile reviews, a lot of people told their friends and a lot of people kind of shared with their friends like, hey, you should follow this person. And so I see that post was definitely one that really helped to get people's attention, but also gain a good amount of followers who are active, proactive, like to engage, like to do likes and not just lurking on the platform, kind of like see it and then don't do anything. But before that, yeah, I was getting a good amount, but I'd say as of like 2 months ago, that's when it took another turn for like increased performance.
Interesting. I know one of the things I learned from you is just being quick to respond. And then the more engagement or the more responses back and forth that you're getting, the better. So it sounds like it's really, I think you said the first hour is like the most important, right? Where like if you get high engagement on the first hour, that will really determine like your algorithm on where you show up on other people's feeds as well, right?
Yeah. And with this, I mean, obviously people who know the LinkedIn algorithm, like the people that work at LinkedIn and kind of like the engineering side, it's really secret. So a lot of things that people say on LinkedIn, like, oh, the algorithm promotes, demotes this, I've never actually seen anyone that knows the algorithm. But with hundreds and thousands of content creators experiencing and like measuring their own data, it's kind of come to a consensus on LinkedIn, kind of in the content creator realm, that the first hour is definitely the most important for how the rest of the life of that post will perform, because the human moderators, as well as the algorithm itself, it kind of measures how well and how much people enjoy that content. And obviously, LinkedIn wants people on their platform engaging with good content. And so in the first hour, especially when you create content, you want to make sure that for that next hour, you know, you're not away from your phone for a complete hour. I'm not saying you have to be on it every minute, but every once in a while, it's best to respond to those comments, because the more likes and comments you get in the first hour will improve the overall visibility that you'll get throughout the whole life of that post.
Mm. And what are some like rookie mistakes that you made in the beginning that like, I guess like what are some more like advanced content creating? Like, let's say you have like good content, but is there like, do you have to be like concise certain times, or does the bit not matter as much? Like, what are your thoughts on like
the length? Format? Yeah. Format is a huge thing that definitely does make a difference. Like for example, you know, most people don't enjoy reading a wall of text. So never like create a post that has just a paragraph. The best thing to do is kind of break it up in 1 to 2 sentences, so it's easier to digest, that I can kind of naturally skim through without losing your place, and it has more of a natural rhythm and flow. And so that part of thing, kind of like breaking it up into easily digestible sentences as opposed to one wall of text, it's really big, because if people click see more and they could just skim through it, that's important. Another thing that I see a lot, people message me a lot like, hey, why isn't my content getting a lot of views? Like, I used to get a lot more views. And then so I look at their post history, and there's a difference between creating an original post. So like you hit the post button, like the plus sign, and then you write out your thoughts, and sharing someone's post. But if you see like a post that did really well, or you see someone who created content, instead of hitting post and you hit share and you share your thoughts, the fact that you shared it, someone else's post, that doesn't perform as well as original content. And similarly, to if you read a Forbes article of like, oh, how to increase your emotional intelligence or something like that, some article that you really enjoyed, if you include that external link in the body of the post, it doesn't perform as well, because LinkedIn, you know, what everyone always says is that LinkedIn wants to promote content that isn't taking people off of their platform. They want their users to be on LinkedIn as long as they can. So if there's an external link that you enjoyed, rather than putting that in the body of your text, kind of create a summary like, hey guys, check this out, I really enjoyed this, here's like 4 takeaways that I liked, and then include the link in the comments, because it doesn't dock you for links in the comments, only links in the post.
Dude, that's awesome. I'm going to try that and I'll let you know, because I was, now that I'm thinking about it, I link a lot to like my podcast and my YouTube video. It does dock me, because like I noticed those definitely don't get as much as like the other like original content.
And as well, like with articles that you create, I noticed like yesterday for Father's Day, you created an article, like a long form article. With those, you might also notice that those views are lower than like just a post. And that's because a view for a long form article is counted as every time that someone actually clicks on the article to read it, as opposed to a post is when like, I think it's half of the post is shown on the feed. So it doesn't matter if someone scrolls right past it and doesn't read your article or your post at all. The fact that they saw your name and decided to scroll past you, that is counted as an impression on a post.
So do you think that we should write less articles and just try to be concise and put it in as many letters as like a regular post will allow you?
I, th- I honestly enjoy, like, articles are helpful, obviously, because the people who do read it usually stay, like, it's a good way. It actually shows the click-through rate, because if it gets a view, then that means someone actually clicked on your article and read it. And those usually have higher engagement because, oh, if you had only 400 views as opposed to 3,000, but you had like a similar amount of views, engagements, then technically that had a better engagement rate. But I think anything, people really enjoy long form content, to be honest. So if you have anything that is greater than 1,300 characters, then that's worth putting onto LinkedIn. The posts are normally, you know, just limited to 1,300 and a quick thought for the day type thing. But the truth is people do enjoy reading like a somewhere that they can find consolidated information on a single topic instead of having to find multiple posts and like reading it as if it were one article.
I see. So you are still a proponent of LinkedIn articles, and I guess like even within LinkedIn articles, like, cause what I've learned from my time at LinkedIn is like, you definitely want to like tag a lot of people. Like I've noticed like, like the stuff that I get the most engagement on is when I'm tagging, like when I'm, let's say I'm acknowledging my whole team at LEIA for having doing a great job for Asian Heritage Month. I noticed like the more people I tag, obviously those are the ones that end up getting like a ton of engagement.
Yeah. That is true. Cause it's like with those people, you know, when you actually recognize them, you do kind of like a favor of recognizing someone. So it's kind of like that law of reciprocity of like, oh, they acknowledge me. I'd like to, you know, acknowledge them back through like a like or comment. And oftentimes when people get that notification, they respond usually when they see it, you know? So a lot of the times in my experience, when I have tagged people, they see it within that first hour. So they like, and they do their comment in that first hour, which also helps the algorithm. And with that, what I always tell people, like you said, you know, like you've noticed the ones that happen are when you do it, but not every post, you know, you're tagging someone. A lot of people, there's something on LinkedIn known as pods, which most people advise against, which is like, you know, every post you tag 50 people or in the comments. And because you're so right, you know, when you tag people, you get higher engagements, but some people get so, you know, that high of, wow, I got a lot of engagement. It's like, I need to tag people now in order to get the engagements that I like. So it's almost addicting. And yeah, that's the scary thing. Like if you tag people, great. Just try and make it sure that every post isn't like that, so you don't get addicted to like pods and people kind of like call you out like, oh, this person gets a lot of engagement, but it's because he tags everyone all the time, you know? But that's, yeah.
No, that's fair. I feel like, yeah, this is very valuable information. Like what are some, like, do you notice like has the algorithms like changed over time, or has it been pretty consistent ever since like you've been on the platform? Like, have you noticed any trends or anything? Or
I mean, a lot of people, you know, people who post more consistently than I do, because I post, like I said, 2 to 3 times a week, but there's people who post every single day or even multiple times a day, every single day of the week. They might say differently than me, like, oh yeah, definitely has changed. But I would say that my content has been fairly consistent throughout the whole time. Like I've done kind of the same format of content, and I've never really noticed that big of a difference. If there was, then it wasn't enough for me to perceive it. If anything, the thing that I've noticed is that over time the algorithm has come to favor comments a lot. You know, as opposed to just like likes, things like that. Comment is the moneymaker because that's where the conversations and the dialogues happen. And recently people say that, linger time, I think it's called linger, like lingering is also beneficial in the algorithm. And that's where the more time that someone spends on your post, the better it will do, because the more time, some people just scroll through and they see someone that they like, so they just hit the like or the heart button without actually reading the post. But if people are actually spending more time on your content, that means that they're actually reading it and actually consuming it. Huh. And so that's only recently that I've heard that lingering has an impact on your content. So if people are actually reading it and liking, then it will do better.
Interesting. What are your thoughts on, because you know how like when you post an article and then after you post the article, then you can actually share like a little blurb about that article in the article. What are some this is so that you can get more people to actually click onto the article as well, your long form article.
Yeah. And that's, I need to test this one out more often because I've only created 3 long form articles in my time of creating content on LinkedIn. But I'd say the big things are 1, optimizing the actual title of the article so that if someone, because they'll see like the link to the article, and if it's just like a, you know, I don't know, numbers often do well, like 10 things that I learned from this, or if it promises value to someone, like if you're on Google and you type in like tips or optimization tips, you decide what you read based off of the title of the article. And so optimizing the title is good. And then in that little blurb that you said, I'd say the most important thing is either establishing logos, kind of like your credibility of like, hey, for my example of the post, it was like, in the past 2 months, I did 500 profile reviews. And so for people who have never met me before, they're like, oh, 500 profile reviews. He might, whatever comes next, that must be pretty good. Like whatever content he's saying or like tips, then that's pretty helpful. Or stating the benefit up front, like, hey, do you want to get past like ATS system? Or hey, like, do you want to get contacted by 100 recruiters? You know, just something like that. Stating the value up front and then saying like, in this article, I share my story or like how this will help you achieve this. So kind of, that hook, getting people in.
Hey, so in sales, we call that basho. Have you heard of basho?
Uh-uh.
So one of the common sales templates is called basho, where it's like to build urgency, it's like, well, what's your credibility? It's like the first thing. And then it's like, why should I care? Why should I care? And then why now? So that's like a common
interesting
term that we use called basho in sales.
Interesting. Yeah. The sales whiz, like, you know, if all of these sales things, it sounds like, you know, apply directly to content. Like they all kind of follow the same psychology of it.
Yeah. I think like my thing, and it's maybe I just need to get with the times, but sometimes I feel like I'm selling out, like by saying like, click here if you want to learn how to get past ATS. I get it, like you're adding value, but sometimes like for me, it's like cringeworthy, right?
Yeah.
Those are the people that get the most views. Like Gary Vaynerchuk, I feel like gets like a ton of views. And sometimes he says like the most cringeworthy things. I'm like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. And like at that point, when you're an influencer, it doesn't matter what you say. It's like people will read what you have to say or the exact same thing before, like they don't, like I said, they don't read it, but they like it, you know, to show up at, but yeah, it's, I know exactly what you mean. I usually don't try and use like buzzwords that, you know, like on a, for example, on a resume, you know, you're not supposed to use like, oh, I describe yourself as like, oh, I'm detail oriented problem solver that will do that. Because it's like, oh, everyone is saying that. So like in my lead lines, I try not to use kind of like those buzz phrases that everyone uses, but something to the extent like, all right, what's a synonym for this whole phrase? Or like, what's the root problem that I'm trying to solve? Mm-hmm. And then what's a better way that I can phrase it in a way that's not like cringy.
I feel like you've cracked the code for, I mean, honestly, like, because nowadays sales, because technology is so important in today's like world of sales, I feel like you just cracked the code on how to get someone to open up like your email. Because I think one of the biggest problems that salespeople have in general is that people are getting inundated because there's all this like marketing software, right? That's like basically like you can tell templated. So I feel like but I feel like you figured out a way that, you know, like, all right, I not only can I get them to open the email, but I'll get them to actually like kind of book a meeting with me. And I feel like you've just cracked it with like your template.
Yeah, because with that, I'd say LinkedIn, I've definitely learned the audience. You obviously know the sales audience better than me. So I feel like you would be able to personalize that template, like that template a lot better than I could. But I feel like the same applies, you know, with learning and understanding whatever audience it is, like in sales, like what template. I feel like through data analytics and just like testing, it really does make such a difference, you know.
Do you A/B test as well?
Or I try like with posts, it's hard to, because you know it's like every post is different. But when I was recruiting, I did a recruiting job for about 6 months before I got the LinkedIn internship this summer. I tried to do things similar to like A/B tests of like, oh, I'll just try same body message, but a different, you know, subject header or things like that. And I did that for the first little bit and saw differences and like results. But in recruiting, you know, it's always on the grind. So I noticed that like I didn't want to spend too much time like doing that as opposed to just like getting out on the doors, for example, more often. But I did notice a difference when I tested like A/B tests with emails and in-mails.
Interesting. So like, I know like a lot of, and it sounds like do you also have a lot of friends or people like other influencers that you follow that are like, I guess, experts, and you kind of study their guidelines so that you could see what you can take away from how they've been successful as well?
Yeah, absolutely. There's like tons of people that I definitely look up to on the platform and whose content kind of like helped me when I got started. Kind of like got started on here. For example, there's one person I'll name drop that throughout my whole time on LinkedIn, I've been like, wow, this guy is like awesome. His name is Austin Belcak. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's B-E-L-C-A-K. And the reason why is because, so I started following him when he only had like 7,000 followers. And what I enjoyed about his content is it was very actionable, you know? So like whenever you read it, he gave a takeaway or like a call to action that I could apply. And so I kind of based a lot of my content when I started out in a similar way, not obviously not the same format things, but I was like, I want to have action steps that people can follow. And then in these like 14 months, he's grown from 7,000 followers to, I think he has like over 250,000 right now. Because people find value in what he shares, and it's always like free value. It's like, I feel like I should be paying for the content that he gives. But yeah, so that's definitely one person that throughout the whole, and there's, I can name so many more people like that, you know, who it's like, wow, I look up to their content because it's just, that's kind of like how I learned.
Interesting. And I feel like obviously all of this is like a huge time commitment, right? Like even getting back to people is like a huge time commitment.
Yeah.
Do you do it because like you genuinely feel like good afterwards, or like, I guess like, how do you know you're not like just addicted just from the rush of like getting likes versus, oh, actually like I'm doing this because like I know deep down inside, like I'm helping someone, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And there's been many times when I've thought the same thing, and it always goes back to like, what I always recommend to people when they start out on LinkedIn or before they even get started. I'm like, all right, before you do anything, you have to define your why, kind of like your purpose of being on the platform. Mm-hmm. So guiding you throughout all of this, you always have to have that end goal of what you want, whether it's like, I'm on here to find a job, I'm on here to build a personal brand, I'm on here to make connection, whatever it is, you have to define your why. And so during the 14 months when my content flopped, you know, obviously there would be times like, man, that was embarrassing, I don't want to do it again, you know, I just spent so much time and like, yeah, it looks bad. But I just have to remind myself, like, why am I doing this? And one, you know, it was like to build my personal brand, kind of like kind of get awareness while I'm still in college, because I wanted to graduate with a job instead of just like, oh, who is this guy, you know? And then, but as I've kind of like started to grow with that. My goal has also been just to help more people. Like, the reason now I create content is that I help someone, you know, who's in a situation that I once was, or is in a situation that I can't even imagine how hard that must be. It's like, I've been given so much, so I want to help people. And so it's like the messages that you receive of like, wow, thank you so much. Or, of, you know, like people are like, wow, I'm just an ordinary person. I didn't think you'd actually respond or like help me with this. It's like those type of things that make it feel so rewarding. It's like, this is why I create content. So yeah, and there's been times when I take like a 2-week break from it and then get back to it. So yeah, that's kind of long-winded answer, but that's what I'd say.
That's awesome, man. Well, thank you so much for all these tips. That maybe next time we can even walk through like a live demo. Maybe you can you could pick apart my profile and some of my posts, and then I'll be grateful, because I'll be like, oh, that's how I can improve. Because I feel like it would help. Because I mean, obviously, all like everything you said is like amazing and great. I think sometimes people want to see you like in action.
Oh yeah, definitely. I know exactly what you mean. Like, it's all cool to hear and listen to, but actually seeing it live and demo, that's when it kind of like becomes more cemented in your mind of like, oh, that's how I can do it.
Yeah.
I'd love to. I totally know what you mean. And like I said, happy to help wherever I can.
Yeah. Well, so I would say, so some of the things I learned from this conversation or that resonates with me is linger time, right? Having a post where people actually stay engaged or reading it, like responding quickly to the comment, so that when you have higher engagement, it like bumps you up in algorithms. Obviously, like being of service and just like giving back to society, and then finding like your why, like why you LinkedIn. So that way you're clear on like your mission and who you're trying to help. And then I would say like taking a data driven approach where track, even like for every one of us, like all the posts that we've created, really analyze like, okay, why did this get a lot of engagement? Why does this have 100 likes versus this one that only had 10 likes? And then figure out like, and then also learn from people like yourself or people who are having success, and then kind of emulating maybe some of the formatting or some of the sentence structures, like looking to see like what they're doing so that you can take away and then implement some of the things you learn.
Wow. Yeah, that's, I couldn't have said that better. You know, that's exactly. And with that, like I said, I just emphasize for people, you know, don't get discouraged if you're starting out on LinkedIn. It is a process. It takes a while. I think with my generation, especially, you know, we're so used to growing up on Instagram or Facebook that you could create an account and then within a few days you have a couple thousand followers, or your posts are already getting like 300-400 likes on LinkedIn. If that's the world that you're used to and you come to LinkedIn, it's really discouraging. You know, it's like, oh man, I got 5-6 likes. But no, trust in the system, the process, and stick to your purpose. Kind of like let that North Star of your purpose guide you. And then over time and being consistent and just trying, reaching out to people for help and engaging with other people's comments, then you'll build your personal brand and your kind of your profile. It, like I said, it takes a while, but it will happen.
Awesome. You heard it here first, folks. The man, the myth, the legend, Austin Henline, man. You heard it. This is the beginning.
No, I appreciate, like I said, Davidson, I look up to you a lot. Like, I really appreciate you having me on here. And anyone listening to this, if you have any questions or want to know more specifically, or your profile personally, you want to kind of have reviewed, don't hesitate to reach out. Love to help out. Feel free to send me a message. And once again, it's my profile is just Austin Henline.
Awesome. I'll link to your profile as well.
Awesome.
Good stuff.
Yeah. So like, thanks for having me on here.
Yeah. Always dropping knowledge bombs. That's how you roll. I see.
that's the goal.
All right. Have a good one. Take care.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Davidson. Take care. Bye.
Well, that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed this episode. Please subscribe and let me know what your thoughts are. If there were any takeaways, I welcome all positive and constructive feedback and hope you enjoy. Stay tuned for more interesting stories and guests. Take care.